This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to the Wrestling War Zone, a Monday Night Wars podcast retrospective. I am JT, of course, joined as always by my co-host here inside the War Zone, Mr. Chad Campbell. Chad, how are you?
Doing good. This has all the makings of a march in the Rosero household. You're optimistic about Providence, the Jets. You're all in on the Jets in March.
All in on free agency. You got Yankee baseball starting. It's March. WrestleMania is coming in a few weeks. A lot going on. This is good time of year. We get the St. Patrick's Day parade on Sunday, the local one we always go to. So this is my official kickoff to spring usually.
Of course, like clockwork, the big locomotive just passed right as we started hitting recording. I don't know if you can hear that, but the Godfather.
I could not actually. So.
Oh wow! Yeah, huge ass train just flying by immediately right as we start recording.
As long as it doesn't go through your house, I'm happy. In your house! We're in your house with this train. So I went out after work. We had a team outing, bowling.
Okay.
So for you is bounce trampoline parks. For me lately, it's been bowling.
You've been hitting it up. Yeah.
Hitting the lanes. So that was cool. And then I'm driving home, and my car had been alerting me for the past 3 days that it's time for an oil change. But miles versus the sticker, the sticker is about, I saw 1,000 more per the sticker, but the car is saying it's time. But I don't know if this is an early warning, you know what I mean? So I'm like, well, when the hell was the last time I had one? So I look at the sticker, which I had not done. Chad, the last oil change I had in this car that I drive to work was, you want to take a guess?
I mean, I would guess maybe, I'm assuming it's been a while.
All right, so. Well, assume too I get the premium there.
Oh, the synthetic. Yeah. Okay, so. I'll go 10 months to a year.
Yep, April 30th was my last oil change. That's a while for that. I mean, our other car, we drive a lot more, so I do a little bit more often, but I was shocked that it had almost been a year. So
even if you get the synthetic grade, they still, on the sticker, only put 3,000 miles. You know what I mean? It's a trick. They were well, they said, buy regulation or some shit.
For the synthetic, you said, or for your car?
For synthetic.
No, they put 7,000 for me or whatever.
Yeah, they do 3,000 no matter what where we go. So it's annoying because you'll look at it and you're like, oh, I'm due for an old. And it's no, I'm not. I got the synthetic. So let's push that. You'll end up being, 4,500 miles past the sticker just because, you got synthetic in there.
Right.
It's annoying. You kind of have to wait for the alert on your car to tell you you need to or check it. But
so your car does the does the alert there?
Jen's does. Mine does not.
Well, the nice thing with
our to check mine like a real man. Thank you.
Touching the dipstick. The other the one I have to get the oil change when I drive. It does give me this alert, but the other car, which is a year newer, has the actual little on the monitor, on the dashboard. If you look, it tells you exactly what percentage away you are, So.
Oh, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Nice. I don't know the accuracy of it, but that's what it does.
we'll go with it.
We'll go there. So it's been an interesting night. I am pretty tired. So last night was so they've now pretty much completed the basement here that they're redoing. So they're like 98%. So they've moved on to, we're also doing our bathroom over, our master bath.
Right.
So we're not sleeping in our bedroom right now. Like the whole bedroom is pretty much just a mess. The bed is apart. So we're just like scrounging. I feel like I'm like 10 again, sharing like one bathroom for the four of us, the tiny little guest bathroom, and just sleeping wherever we can. So I've been alternating between my recliner and then this new couch in the basement. So last time, like, okay, I'm going to just crash down here for the first time in the basement. And of course, I am frantically updating Twitter, waiting for Le'Veon Bell news. And then word hits that he's going to announce it at midnight with his album drop. So I'm like, fuck, I am tired. I played a game of Madden. I'm laying on the couch, fall asleep around like 11:40, but I left ESPN on. Stir around midnight, and I frantically check Twitter, and I see that the album dropped, but like no one, like every beat writer is like, I'm not listening to this fucking album. Like someone listened and tell me what he says. So I'm like, God damn it. So I put on like NFL Network and ESPN. I'm flipping back and forth, and they're all just about like Beckham, right? There's like nothing else. I'm like, fuck this. I'm passing back out. So then I stirred again around like 12:30, and I see it on ESPN. I'm like trying to clear my eyes. Le'Veon Bell signs with the Jets. So then, of course, I get like a burst of energy for like 25 minutes. I'm like going through Twitter again. And then I'm trying to get comfortable. You know, when you're like sleeping somewhere like net new, like it's a nice couch, it's comfortable, but like you're not used to like the position where you can lay. So I'm really struggling to fall asleep. Finally pass back out around 3 because these guys still have like a lot of their tools down in the closet down here. They have their compressor plugged in, and I guess it just like runs like every few hours, like it just reboots or something. At like 3 in the morning, it was like a fucking Mack truck driving through my basement. I jumped a fucking mile. this fucking thing is like right behind me, like in this closet. So I had a hard time getting back to sleep again. It was just a fucking shit show overnight, but whatever. I'd rather lose sleep because Le'Veon Bell signed than him not signing. So,
yeah. Are we predicting playoffs in the upcoming year? Or were you ready to make that prediction? Or
I gotta see. I gotta see who else they sign.
There was a lot. Boy, it feels like a long time since July and August of last year, where everybody was like, you know, look out for the Jets. They right. might be the, you know, they could be a sleeper team.
Yeah, maybe they were a year early. I mean, I do think Darnold's legit. Like, everyone's bringing up the shit like Bell had said. Oh, I wouldn't play for the Jets for $100 million or whatever. But they neglect to mention, of course, that was in February last year before they had a franchise quarterback. So I think his tune probably changed a bit. I think the AFC...
Well, maybe he signed with them. I mean, I don't know.
Right, clearly. But, well, yeah. They were given, like, the whole, like, he didn't really want to be there. He's just doing whatever.
That's the same thing they were saying for Bryce. Yeah. He's there till he's 40.
Right. So, exactly. So they... So, I mean, I think the AFC is going to have a shakeup. Like, you'll have your Patriots. The Chiefs are going to be good again. San Diego is going to be very good again. And I think the Browns are the favorite in the North. Yeah. But, I mean, the Ravens are going to be not as good as they've been. I mean, they made a couple signings today, but they're losing a lot of pieces, and you're putting faith in Jackson, who's not really – you know, you're pretty much committed to a run game versus a passing game there. And so I think there's a lot of moving parts. So I think they'll take a step back. I think Pittsburgh is going to take some sort of a step back.
Oh, yeah.
They'll still probably contend, but I don't think they're going to be, like, the force. And then so what does that leave you, really? You get the South with Indy. So then you kind of get this mix, I think, of the Jets, of, like, Houston.
Chargers.
Well, I'd put the Chargers in. Like, I think two are coming out of the West. So I think you're kind of...
Possible contender.
Yeah, yeah. So if you're looking at kind of like that last wild card spot, you know, I think you're looking at... I think you look at the... I'd say like Texans, Steelers, and then who else? I don't know. I guess like Denver, maybe. Oakland. I guess Oakland, maybe, could make a run. And then the Jets. So, yeah, I mean, I think they're no worse than like the fourth best wild card, second wild card team. You know what I mean? So, and I think there's room to move in that group. If Darnold makes the leap to the second year, he looked great in December against some tough defenses. So I definitely think there's room to maneuver and move. But I think, yes, they're on the right path, especially I like Greg Williams as defensive coordinator. So we'll see.
Yeah, I bet you do. The dirty coach himself fits right in.
I love dirt. Anything you want to cover before we get into the show here?
I had a kind of an awakening at supper tonight where I realized I'm getting old.
Yeah,
I was getting Chinese food, and there was a little bit of a backup of a line, and the girl in front of me, she was probably in her early 20s, and she sent no less than 10 probably Snapchats in the 5 minutes we were waiting, and I just thought to myself, I was like, this seems like a lot of work. Like watching her take a random picture and then commenting on it and putting in the filters and everything else. It just,
but I think it's intuitive, like, right? I think it's just like intuitive to them. It's like, whatever. They probably just do it without thinking now because they do it so fast, you know?
Yeah. It just seemed like a lot of work to me. And that's when I, realized that time was passing me by. Cause even like Instagram, like I kind of scroll that, but
right.
I mean, you know, I'm not doing an Insta story. No. So.
Yeah, it's probably like how we picture our parents looking at us, like when we play video games and stuff. Yeah, you know what I mean, just like.
I know I'm in a Young Guns wrestling chat on Slack, and they make fun that most of our communications in Messenger. So already we're getting age shamed by that.
Yeah, whatever. Although if Facebook ends up going down, we might be moving to Slack anyway. Google Hangouts.
What is going on today?
Yeah, I don't know. They're, Instagram and Facebook are both down, I believe so. And if you believe the truth, they're being criminally investigated. Facebook is for using data, giving it to third parties or whatever. In other news too, I'm happy. So I have two work trips coming up where I'm flying in the next 2 weeks. And I was very happy that Mr. Donald Trump, who I'm not a fan of, grounded those Boeing planes or whatever, because I was like, I was actually checking. I checked my tickets and I wasn't.
Yeah,
not
like
on
the
one.
Ones that keep. Yeah, I didn't. So, I mean, I don't watch much of the news, but I kind of missed that till today. And then somebody said, like, yeah, there was this huge plane crash and what, like 196 people died or how many?
Ethiopia? I think there were two separate ones.
I was like, Jesus Christ.
On these planes, there were two separate ones. So I saw yesterday at the gym it was on. So I'm really, this is another sidebar, but I'm really pissed off. So I go to Planet Fitness and they moved the ellipticals, which I prefer to the treadmills. From they had them like kind of half and half, and now they've like condensed all the ellipticals on one side and the treadmills on the other. And I had such a great elliptical spot before. I had the local Channel 10, NBC, and then I had ESPN right in front of me. Like, so I can kind of, when I go, I'd like be able to just kind of see what was going on in the sports news and the local news if I went around 5. Now they've moved to the other side, and I have fucking E and Fox News in front of me. Right. So you know, Fox News is like the worst for the headlines, you know?
You can catch up on Tucker Carlson and the Bellas, so there you go. Sounds like an upgrade to me.
And then fucking MSNBC is on there too, I think. But so I like it's always some Kardashian bullshit is on, like E when I'm there. But anyway, long story short, Fox News was talking about the plane thing. So yes, two of these planes crashed overseas, like in the last couple of days. It was Ethiopia, and then I feel like it was somewhere else, like in Asia or something. And every other country grounded this plane. Like they're refusing to use it, and the U.S. was not. And then Trump today did an executive order to ground them all. So good for him. But what they're saying is that the planes couldn't like do their some kind of quality exam or because of the government shutdown. Like they had to rush and they didn't get to do like their usual thorough exam, which is fucking scary. I mean, there's nothing you can do. I mean, you know, a car accident, you could be like, all right, well, I could maybe swear, like whatever. You know, you can kind of control your own destiny a little bit. But on a plane, it's like, fuck, if that thing's going, you're gone. You know, there's nothing you can do. So, I mean, that's scary shit. You're just trusting that they know what the hell they're doing, you know?
Oh, God. Yeah. That sounds frightening, but a good, rare decision for the Donald then. So, good
for
him.
Yeah. So, but I had checked anyway. It looked like, per my tickets, I was not on one of those planes at this point. So, I was happy anyway. But I was taking American, and they're one of the few that were using them, so... Anyway, looks like my life is spared, hopefully. We'll see if there's any Final Destination type shit in play anyway.
That's fortunate for all of us.
Yeah, thanks. The war zone would end in 95, sadly.
Oh, are we ready?
Yeah, so we do have a little business to take care of. We forgot, we hyped the feedback, and then we forgot to read it. I think we were both kind of zonked by the end of that show last week. But we did have a few notes here we wanted to read. So this is feedback for In Your House 5. That we had gotten from a few of our listeners. So I want to thank you for participating. We wanted to make sure we read it because we promised you if you put it, we'd read it. Our buddy Burdette, 25159, said, In Your House 5 ended the WWF's 95 pay-per-view agenda with a great bout between Bret Hart and Davey Boy Smith. The undercard, which was for the most part nothing to write home about, had Hunter Sumsey versus Henry Godwin in a hogpen match. So the return of Billy Jim. Jay Hinchy apparently is under the name Burdett. No, I'm like, I'm at Johnson City Gung with Buddy Landell. Complete Landell coming out to Ric Flair's 2001 theme ripoff. Balls of Mahoney dressed as Santa Claus. The mid-event made the undercard look like an afterthought. WCW's pay-per-view Starrcade would be better with the World Cup concept. That's 1,000 times better than the Battle of Garbage that stunk up Starrcades 91 and 92.
Oh, yeah. There we go. if we hear Medusa going to WCW as a work, then that'll seal the deal. That it's,
All right. Jeremy Nichols back home, coming home. I remember watching this pay-per-view live, enjoying it. Also not being sure who was going to win. This is really flashback stuff now. Jeremy Nichols feedback. Also not being sure who was going to win between Bret Hart and British Bulldog. I guess that means they did their job building Bulldog up because I saw him as a threat to Bret's title reign. I think Hunter versus Godwin is still pretty good. Owen Diesel did a nice job making Diesel more of a cool heel. It's just a shame we had to sit through Taker Mabel and Johnson Landell. Bret Bulldog was and still is outstanding. I just wish they built to the finish more. It kind of comes out of nowhere, but it's still an easy pay-per-view one to watch, and I go back to watch regularly. And finally, our good friend Pete F3 says, this feels like a real turning point for the WWF and the Monday Night Wars, the first sign they were realizing they had to change with the times. On the show, we have Blood, the very start of Goldust, is an apparently sexual predator, a sea change for the character who is just a generic weirdo at this point. Bret Hart bleeding in the main event. By my count, at least 3 weapon shots, the gold record, Santa's sack of goodies, and Cornette jabbing Bret with the racket. Shots with weapons have been banned for basically the past 2 years. WWF was trying to maintain their family entertainment image in the aftermath of the steroid trial. Just a few weeks ago on Raw, in fact, there was a Camp Cornette beatdown where Jim consciously did not use the racket. He just stomps. That's out the window now. And last but not least, of course, Blood. I think there's also another Sonny as a sexpot segment in here somewhere that was mentioned that really started a Survivor Series. I used to have the sort of hipster opinion that the main event here is better than SummerSlam. When I last watched it, I no longer felt that's the case. The opening part of this match drags pretty badly and doesn't pick up until either Bret gets crotched on the ropes or power slammed on the floor, whichever comes first. The finishing stretch is great and an excellent match, just not as strong. We'll see what Chad and JT think. And fair enough. You can hear our thoughts on that episode. There's also a real nitpicky thing to gripe about, but I really would like to see a callback to the SummerSlam finish where Davey's sitting down the Sunset Flip but Bret escaping. That would have been a cool past midnight feel to the rematch. Finally, whatever Lawler and Vince tried to put over, yeah, those decidedly not the same tights that Davey Boy wore at SummerSlam.
Yeah, definitely not.
So thanks to you three fellas for your feedback. We much appreciate it. Of course, Bigelow34@ProBars.com. There is a thread for feedback, and the next time we'll kind of solicit will be for Starrcade in a couple weeks. So that said, we are going to start tonight with Monday Night Raw, the fallout from In Your House 5. And with that, I will turn things over to Chad.
All right. We get a breakdown of In Your House. They culminate with the Diesel and Taker face-off. Vince narrates over that we'll find out why they were not sharing the holiday spirit tonight on Raw. We get some pyro, and they are live for this set of tapings from Newark, Delaware. So, big town there. Jeez, and
Delaware, that is that's a deep cut. Newark, yeah, Delaware, not even like Dover, you know, I mean, like Newark,
right yeah. Newark of all places. The King predicts there'll be a new Intercontinental champ tonight in Yokozuna, and they sort of set the show up for us, and then we go right to our first match.
I'm trying to see quick. Oh, well, that's is were they at the University of Delaware, and is that what they said?
I don't know,
because it looks
I
like that is they're... maybe in Newark.
Okay.
So that would make sense. Because I didn't know. I was looking quick to see first. I was looking quick to see first if it was like near the beaches, because I know the Delaware beaches are kind of nice. But yeah, it looks like that's where the University of Delaware is. So that's got to be why they're there.
There you go. First match is Making a Difference Fatu versus Double J Jeff Jarrett. So Fatu gets in the ring. He dances with Tim White. Double J struts when he leapfrogs over Fatu and then gets pounded away. Fatu has a headbutt straight to the nuts. I mean, absolutely a complete low blow that Tim White does nothing about. And then he struts around imitating Double J. That gets Double J pissed off. Vince has the opinion that Fatu has more rhythm than Double J.
Of course.
And can sing better. So, you know, a lot of proclamations.
Well, he does later sing on that album, the Dirty F Rap album, right? When he sings put a little lass on it.
I guess I should have fired up that track to see if I agreed with it.
Compare it to With My Baby Tonight.
With My Baby Tonight, yes. Fatu misses a charge in the corner, and Double J gets a neck breaker. Jarrett does a leg drop over the middle rope, and then he struts around. They go to break, which we'll get to it with the Nitro, but this was about – they went to their first break, Raw, about 6 minutes into their show, And as we'll talk about with the Nitro tonight, it is a insanely long segment one for Nitro that goes about 20 minutes and has about five or six things happening. So we'll just contrast that. Back from break, Jarrett continues to work over Fatu. It's decent, I guess I would say. It's certainly not spectacular, but it's not atrocious. Fatu is favoring his shoulder. Vince has a line that says, "Ain't I nuts, Tour?" and I always like when he says lines like that, and Keane goes, "What?" Like, that's his exasperated. Like, what are you talking about? And Double J looks to lock on the figure four, but Ahmed runs in for the DQ. Really doesn't inflict hardly any punishment on Double J. Jarrett scurries away very quickly. So that's our opening contest. I ended up going a star and a half on this guy.
Yeah, star and a half here, too. A couple notes on the open, by the way. So they do a ton of Christmas puns in the recap of In Your House, which... I don't know. What do you think of these punny openings that they're doing now? Like, we had the wasn't one last week. It was like a weird one too. Oh, the ER one, or was that?
The ER one was pretty bad. Yeah. I feel like they did something for the Halloween too.
Yeah,
it's okay. I mean, it's. I don't know. I mean, it's gonna be corny. It does come off as corny, I guess.
At least they seem to be trying to be corny, I guess.
Right. I suppose. Yeah, I mean, I'm not too hot and bothered with it. And they're short. I mean, they're like a minute long, so you can just sort of bypass it.
Okay, very good. We also have brand new graphics, kind of a red hint to it. So we've kind of – December seems to be the time where they do like this overhaul a little bit, fall into December. In 94 is when they started the blue graphics at the end of the year that we had for most of 95, and now we kind of have the red that would really, I think, stick around – I want to say almost until early 97, we kind of get this red-based open. So always starts a little bit earlier. I kind of associate the look with the year, you know, but I always forget that it started. They start a little bit earlier.
Yeah, I'm really bad with stuff like that. I didn't even notice that. But yeah,
it's more of like the
surprising.
Blocky versus like the blue kind of sleek. Anyway, I think Jarrett coming back is a good, credible filler. We talked about that on the last show. Gets a legit match to come back to, not a squash. Fatu really not doing much.
No.
Vince references Jarrett wearing blue, which is similar to what he had in Your House too. He kind of notes that, so I thought that was interesting. It's always interesting to me, the stuff that Vince calls out, you know what I mean, like versus the shit he just ignores. Usually we get the usual hard head tropes from Fatu in there too. Vince notes that Double J had some ring rust. He also mentions again that he entered the Royal Rumble. Jarrett works a shoulder a lot. And Vince talks a lot about Michaels having a retire angle that King is really pushing hard that Shawn's done. So he's really going in on that. I thought the backbreaker about Fatu was nice. I thought Fatu's shoulder selling was fine. Ahmed comes out and causes the DQ, like you said. You know, yeah, I mean, fine enough match. The shoulder work was okay. Really not a good showcase of Jarrett. I get that they're trying to build a feud with Ahmed, but I would have just had him go over here and then have Ahmed show up. I mean, it seemed like they're protecting Fatu a bit. I don't know why. He's cooked at this point already. So a star and a quarter, and not too much going on. I don't know if I said star and a half before, but it was actually a star and a quarter I had. So.
Not knocked off a quarter star just talking about
yeah,
it.
That's it.
Damn it. So Doc is with Gorilla Monsoon. They're kind of in the crowd area. And we get the classic Rumble music.
Yes.
So I was kind of surprised they were still hanging on to that this late in the game. Gorilla says Diesel's a big boy and he'll get his title shot somewhere down the line, but it's going to be Taker at the Rumble. And then Doc's really angling to get some names for the actual Rumble match itself. And Doc says, well, we know Jeff Jarrett's the only name we know so far. And Gorilla says, not so fast. He will be at the Rumble, but not in the match itself. It'll be him versus Ahmed Johnson. And then they announced that some names are going to start being rolled out on Superstars. Doc says millions of people want to get into the Royal Rumble.
Millions everywhere.
Yeah, and then Gorilla says there will be names from the past and names you've never heard before.
That's true, though.
Even, mean, how is that a selling point?
Yeah.
But, okay.
It is actually true, because I think there's at least two guys in that Rumble that probably nobody had heard of. At least like 90% of us WWF fans had not heard of.
Oh, man.
I did like Gorilla tossing JJ. Keep calling him JJ, because that's how I wrote it. But double J's name out of the Rumble. I thought that was cool that he's making a fight, Ahmed, and Jerry can't dictate himself. I thought it was like a cool power move by Gorilla, so I dug that.
Then we get a Goldust promo for Razor. I thought this was pretty well done, where Goldust has a good showing here. He kind of, to me, this hit more on than the In Your House stuff on the, is it mostly psychology or is it him, you know, really stalking Razor for his affection? He does tell Razor that they can ooze machismo together. Mm-hmm. But I thought this worked better, and we didn't seem to get as much like repulsion from Vince and King after his promo.
Yeah, I think they're trying. They're kind of realizing, like, they're slowly piecing together that he is just fucking with Razor, and like they really present it that way. But Goldust definitely pushes the envelope quite a bit, and it only escalates between here and the Rumble, which is good. But I like the progression of the Goldust character, and I like that they waited a bit. Like they kind of let him get established. You know, they kind of showcased him as a bit of a weirdo, but they let him wrestle a few matches. They kind of put over the look and what he's about. And now we're getting into a meaty storyline. I'm kind of glad they didn't just come in and shove him into something like this. That they kind of just let it simmer and naturally progress to build it to the Rumble. So I thought that was well done. Like they didn't try and shoehorn it in and rush it to Survivor Series or something like that.
Right. Then we're up to our second match, which is Buddy Rydell versus Spark Plug Bob Holly. Doc is shilling the Mania video games at ringside. He has them kind of lined up on the apron. They are throwing in the cheat codes VHS again if you order for him. He says it's tough to find in the stores. So.
Oh, the cheat codes or the game? Because
the games itself, I think he said, were very.
We have shitty distribution, so good luck.
Very hot item for the holiday season. Kind of miss Barry. I feel like.
Told you he'd be sad when he's gone.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. Yeah. Anyway, I mean, Doc's in mid-sentence shilling this shit, and the bell rings, and he still has these games like lined up on the corner of the ring, like as he's talking. And even King says, like, get Doc out of the way before he gets stepped on. So King also talks about the Mike Tyson fight from this weekend, which we hear a lot of that from both Raw and Nitro. So that was the hot sports item that they wanted to make sure you knew as the viewer that both these shows were live.
Was that the comeback? They talk about. Was that his comeback fight?
I don't know. I looked it up. It looked like it was apparently a pretty poor fight for Tyson, and then he got like a huge knockout.
Who was he? What was it? Who did he go against?
Oh, God. I keep looking at it. I want to say Buster Douglas. It was not Buster Douglas.
No, was it Peter? What's his name? That was his comeback.
No,
right?
No. Let me look it up. Hang on. It was.
Suspense is killing me.
This would have been December. God, when would this have been?
95.
It was Buster Mathis.
Oh, okay.
Buster. Yeah, Buster.
You think
they're
trying to trick people into thinking it was Buster Douglas under a new name?
Yes. His comeback fight was the fight before versus Peter McNeely.
That's what I was thinking of.
God, he was off for 4 years. I mean, I was 9, so mainstream boxing wasn't kind of in my periphery. But
it was big for me. It was, I mean, it was big around here because of Vinny Paz, and it was just big in general. Like, I remember watching, like, Friday Night Fights or whatever the fuck it was, Tuesday Night Fights, whatever it was on ESPN.
Yeah.
My uncle was super into it. Like, he would get every big fight on pay-per-view. We'd go over his house and watch them. So I saw, you know, the Holyfields, you know, fights, and I didn't see the early Tysons because by the time I kind of started being aware of it more, like, I knew of him. But mainly because of wrestling, like that, you know, Buster Douglas was the referee, was supposed to be ended up taking Tyson's spot. Like, that's kind of when it really became more aware to me. And probably because of Mike Tyson's punch out, I'm guessing, which I had. But then, like, I remember following the lineage, like Razor Ruddock and, like, Riddick Bowe and, like, all those guys. And when Lennox Lewis, he had a big fight against, did he fight, what the fuck did he fight? It was in England. I don't remember.
Oh, I don't know.
There was a big one in there, 93, 94, somewhere in there. So anyway, I remember watching that. So I remember seeing a lot of big ones. My point being, I watched the Tyson Holyfield at my uncle's, like both of them, the one where he bites the ear and everything else. So I think that has to be coming up pretty soon after this, right? Was that like 96, 97?
Yeah, I was looking at his record. So he fought Evander back-to-back. Was right. it the first one or the – oh, yeah. It
the
was
second,
the second
the
one.
Yeah.
So it was June 28th, 97 when he bites the ear. Okay. I mean, that's probably like the first I mean, I remember like, oh, Foreman's this old guy and he's the champion, but really the bite in the ear is the first time boxing kind of – I was aware of what was kind of going on.
So. And that's funny. So that's – would you say June 97?
Yeah, June 97.
And he's in the WWF by January 98.
Yeah. And he doesn't fight from June 97 till January 99.
Yeah, no, so he's pretty much cooked at that point.
DQ'd or barred or whatever. Yeah.
So when was the first Holyfield?
November of 96.
Okay.
So they turned that one around pretty quick.
Yeah, yeah. All right.
So there you go. There's your Tyson biography.
Right, boxing in the 90s was awesome. I mean, I watched last year on my network. No, I watched last year on, I think it was ESPN Classic. On ESPN Classic, they had the Tyson-Douglas fight, and it was a cool trip to watch. It was a big deal. I mean, boxing was huge.
Maybe
in the 90s.
You can hop in on some of those the year that was.
Yeah, when they get to the year of pop in 93 or whatever. Pazienza of Macho Camacho was like a fucking – I mean, that was like the World Series here in Rhode Island. That was such a big fight.
I do remember definitely the Holyfield-Lewis fight that was a draw.
Yeah, that might be the one I'm thinking of.
That one I thought was just awful. I mean, that's in 99. And Yeah, this is 99. And this was basically like after this, Holyfield was done. But it was just like, come on. Clearly not a draw. And they just did that. But I digress. So back to this match. I've got to go back to my notes.
Next week
now.
On the Boxing War Zone.
I mean, that actually might be pretty cool. I'm going to go back and watch those fights. I did have a VHS tape, so the Rumble in the Jungle and the Thrill in Manila. Those were fun.
It makes you wait. I mean, I know guys like – there's a bunch of guys in our chat, Souza and the Cowboy. Like, there are still – I think Calvin. Like, there are still some big boxing fans. But I've tried, and I just can't. Like, I don't know if it's just the names. Like, I'm sure there are fights that are still good. Like, my cousin – Frank still goes like every month when they do it at Twin River Casino. Like he's still big into it here, and it's still actually big in Rhode Island. Like there's still guys that come up and go out through here. It's still a pretty big boxing town. But yeah, I mean the magic of like late 80s, early 90s boxing was just like a sight to behold.
Yeah, I got into it a decent amount. Probably it was right around the time PTBN was starting up because that's when I was still really big in MMA too. So like right when like Adrian Bronner was coming up the ranks. I mean, I think it's just sort of a combination of one, the belts are so, you know, widespread that, I mean, if you say like, who's the heavyweight champion of the world? I mean, I don't really know. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It became more name based where, you know, like, oh, okay, Floyd Mayweather and Pacquiao are your big guys and Canelo and then, but what championship do they have? I have no idea. And then the other was that they were so protected, too. Because, right. I mean, that's what happened with Bronner. Like, I mean, he was just so protected and was made to look gangbusters. And then when he was put into fights where there was a lot of peril, he was just, you know, exposed.
I think there's some magic, too, to the heavyweight fights. You know what I mean? Like, just these two big fucking monsters going at it.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of – that's honestly part of the – MMA problem, I think, right. too. I mean, I don't know if that's just me because I'm a big guy, but it's like, I mean, Jesus, it's like, I know that somebody like BJ Penn could kick my ass,
right.
but he's 155 pounds. I'm 280 pounds. So it's like, I literally weigh
all right,
almost,
Vince.
You know, double him. So.
It's the vanilla midgets in MMA. Check him.
Well, it is. I mean,
no,
it's
true. It's true.
I mean, you know, he's like 5'8", 155.
Yeah, no, I get you.
Sure, his technique is elite. And again, I'm not saying I could go toe-to-toe with him.
Fucking but... Dylan over here saying he can beat up Brock Lesnar.
Yeah, if BJ Penn was in the ring with me, he'd have a heart attack.
Or he just listened right. to him talk about booking for like an hour and just fucking tap out himself.
Wow.
This is it's just a different time. To me, the magic of the heavyweights, I think, is what carried the 90s. And it's not even all the 90s. It really was done like by the time like 95, 96 comes in. But now it's, I mean, whatever. It's the Klitschko fucking triplets over the fuck, just like dominate the heavyweights and that's it. It's just tough. I mean, now too, it's like a space thing. I only got like so much mind share. You know, like boxing is just so far down the list for me to like care about.
That's true too.
You know, back then I was like, whatever. Like I was dying for shit to watch like in the 90s. So I would just watch whatever. But I did watch Pacquiao Mayweather and I did watch Mayweather McGregor. So I've kind of watched like the event stuff, but that's about it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So King says that Bob Holly's toy race car comes broken just like his.
Bob Holly, start your engines!
Lindell's working over Holly in a real methodical fashion. The crowd is not too excited at all for this.
No, would you be?
Back body drop and camel clutch. Lawler says some big surprises are coming for the Rumble. So I would guess that was a tease for Vader.
And a few others. Know. There are a bunch of like mystery people in this Rumble. Like they don't really announce a ton, I don't think. Well, maybe they do announce it, but they don't really like... You'll see. It's a weird year because like the roster is really kind of thinned out and there's not a ton of star power, but there's some cool like cameos that show up in that Rumble. So they really were pushing like it's the year of kind of like you never know who's going to show up. And I think Vader was
part coming
of it.
Out.
But yeah, okay. it was beyond that too.
So Buddy puts his head down and gets DDT'd by Holly, crossbody by Holly, gets a two count. He misses a drop kick, and then Lindell gets his corkscrew elbow, which actually looks pretty cool to get the win. Buddy actually got some pops, I think, just because that move looks pretty awesome.
He's big in Delaware.
he's over in Delaware, the true nature boy of Delaware. Kind of like the opener. I didn't think this was too bad, but certainly nothing great. I ended up going a star and 3/4 on this one, so barely edging out the opener.
I want to touch high. I went 2.25. I like Buddy here, and I like King. I thought was actually pretty good because you could tell he obviously knows Buddy pretty well, and I must like him because he really puts over. He's waited 17 years for this, and he puts him over strong as a player. And I really do think they were going to prep him for something. We can talk about what happens to him in a minute. But, yeah, I mean, it's really just like a miracle showcase for him out of nowhere. But he had like, a really good 95, right? Wasn't it, like, his big year in Smoky Mountain?
Yeah, I mean, he was certainly around. And
didn't he have the match with Sean? Was that 95?
Yeah, that was either 95 or late 94. I think it was 95. So, yeah, I mean, he was certainly doing some things. I mean, it's kind of weird because Smoky Mountain – by 95 was clearly edging toward extinction, but
he I thought he was good. You mentioned he was deliberate on offense. I thought he was crisp as well. Vince, you know, talks about DiBiase a bit, says he'll clear up the Santa Claus stuff later, and he reiterates for all of us that this was not the real Santa Claus, making that very clear to everybody. Vince also talks about the return to Hibbley Jim and then the Rumble, like you mentioned. Holly, and the crowd definitely flattened. This is because of the slower pace, I think. I did like the corkscrew elbow. I thought it was fine, but it was a really tough match to send out there to eat time on a rare live show. I think that was a bigger problem here. You know, we get one live show a month pretty much, besides pay-per-view, but for TV, and for them to spend the time on just like kind of a plotting match where nobody knows Lindell and Holly is not really over. So it was a tough match. Like I would have saved this maybe for the next week when you're on a tape and you could sweeten it a bit and not really sent this out here to die on the live show where they couldn't help it. So yeah, 2.25, I dug it. But do you want to? Should we talk about Lindell for a minute?
Yeah, I mean, this is it, right?
Well, he does. He is on another
Superstars.
Yes, against Brett, right?
No, it's versus Matt Hardy, is what Cage Match has.
He fights Brett, I thought, because we had it in the '96 project. I thought it's listed. Let me see.
That may be taped before.
Well, yeah, it's definitely taped before this. I think it's like the next day because he doesn't make it past a set of tapings.
I don't know why that wouldn't be on Cage Match, but Cage Match is...
I'm pretty sure it's on our watch list. Hang on.
Oh, yeah. Okay, it was. It was taped. It was actually taped this night.
Okay, yeah. It airs on Mania.
Mania, 113, which is weird because the Superstars match versus Matt Hardy airs on that Saturday Superstars 12/23. And then the Mania matches one whatever, and then that's it. And then I was wanting to see, because the Observer that came out this week did not have anything on him. But, I mean, a pretty short run. So, I guess, what did you think may have been his plan if they would have stuck with him or whatever?
Well, I think they were going to stick with him. So, if I recall, and I'm kind of going with a mix of Wikipedia, but also I remember Between the Sheets covered this, like, a few years ago. They talked about his quick run. I think they did one of these weeks in 95. So he debuted December 5th, the same day as Ringmaster. we'll get to eventually. And without a contract. So he does the match on In Your House. He does the match here against Holly. You get the matches for Superstars. You get the Heart match, which is actually a title match on Mania. And then I believe this just notes that he suffered an injury outside the ring shortly after debuting, tore his right quad and missed 6 months. I'm pretty sure I remember on Between the Seasons they said he like slipped on ice or something and fucked his leg up leaving the arena like after these tapings. Because I remember they're talking about just like a shitty
Yeah, luck. Here, I'll just read it from the, it's from the January 2nd, 96 Observer. It says, Buddy Lindell apparently messed up his ankle at the tapings in Bethlehem. He slipped on ice going through a revolving door and tore up his ankle and needed surgery and will be out of action for at least 8 weeks. Lindell's job for Ahmed Johnson was a last-second deal. Vince McMahon and Jim Ross were apparently trying to convince Dean Douglas to work the match, and Douglas wouldn't because of his back injury. There was no contingency plan, and Lindell basically was asked to help them get out of a jam. So there we go. Apparently he was going to be rewarded for being a team player by getting a spot on the roster, but wound up injured almost immediately, and that was kind of the end of that.
Yeah, Wiki says after his injury healed, he worked a few more matches before leaving the company. But, I mean, it doesn't look like it, right, based on
– Yeah, I mean, cage match with WWF is pretty spot on. And right. The next listing for Buddy is a couple of events in 96 and 97 on some kind of Tennessee indies. And then he did, like, a house show against T.L. Hopper in Knoxville in early 97. But
maybe that's what they're talking about, Wiki. But
he was certainly not a regular with the company ever again.
Yeah, and Graham doesn't have anything for him either. So, all right. So that sucks. I mean, like, a guy waited so long to get that shot. He comes in. They're actually going to reward him. And I don't think he gets a huge push, but I do think he probably is one of those guys that we see a ton of in 96 where they – are, you know, above jobber level, but you know, kind of like where Holly is now or Fatu or Savio, where they're picking up matches, they're picking up wins, and then they would put over the bigger name. So I think he would have settled in there and probably just had a spot for a while, just kind of eating up a space in the mid card, because they bring in a ton of those guys in 96. I mean, you mentioned Teal Hopper, you know, Tony yeah. Anthony and Freddie Joe Floyd, Tracy Smothers, Alex Porteau. Like, you know, they bring in like six or seven of those guys to come in and just fill that mid card and freshen up a bit where they beat the jobbers on Superstars, lose to the big names elsewhere. So I think Lindell probably just kind of falls into that category for a bit if he hangs on. So it sucks for him. I mean, you feel bad for it's such a shit way to go down, you know, fucking slip on ice.
It's kind of the Buddy Lindell story, though. It's apropos. Our sponsors for the Raw, I did write that down. We had some Hot Shots Basketball, the Karate Fighters, of course, and the RC Ricochet car. So there you go. I'm guessing all three of those were hotter toys than the WrestleMania game
maybe.
For the Christmas season. Then we get Brother Love with Ted DiBiase.
His favorite.
Ted's still rocking the turtleneck, but tonight
he probably even changed. He just fucking went out partying and came back in the same fucking outfit.
This was a white one, at least. So a little bit of a Survivor Series 90 reunion here.
Ted was still into his demons, right, at this point? He doesn't clean up till WCW, right?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Okay. So I don't blame him at this point, honestly.
Ted calls out Santa Claus. He says he's from the South Pole.
Of course.
Makes the distinction there. And then he says that 1996 will be the year of the Million Dollar Corporation.
Oh, God.
Sid and 123 Kid are going to be the tag champs.
Okay.
And, I mean, really the most important note of this whole interview is he says the Million Dollar Championship will return.
Yes.
which we know where that's headed. But no mention of Ringmaster or Austin by name. But that's the first mention of what will become of Austin coming into the company.
Yep, that's coming in a couple weeks, I believe. So 3 weeks, maybe, I think. So fucking Santa. He takes everything he can get his hands on. I mean, he was probably right on Sid and Kid. I think they were probably going to win the titles at the Rumble, was my guess, if Sid sticks around and they keep with the plan. I guess we actually, have we talked about... Oh, no, Sid's still here. That's right. We'll see him at the Rumble.
Which was right, Rumble. And then this is... three segments in a row where, I mean, you got Landell who's gone after this, Xanta who's gone after this mention, and then Sid who's not long for the world either. So a lot of turnover on the hillside for sure. We get Freddie Blassie's Raw Bowl vignette, and then we jump right into our main event, right? Which is Yokozuna versus Razor Ramon for the Intercontinental Championship. Now, when Yoko comes out to the ring, this was very Bush League looking. So when Yoko comes out to the ring, you could see the crew guys on the floor, and they had Brother Love's carpet still rolled up, like they hadn't carried it away from ringside. So you could see this huge tube of Brother Love's carpet, I don't know. It certainly didn't look polished. Like, it looked like a WCW production moment, you know, and you don't get those.
That happens on these live.
All too often.
I almost wonder if they're doing it on purpose. Like, because they're live, they're trying to show that things are hustling, they're moving, you know, like they're a little wild and crazy. Like shit's, you know, they're on the fly kind of a bit. Like, they're just moving along. So, I don't know. It felt like maybe almost like they're just doing the shit on purpose. Did you mention the Robo Lad? I'm sorry. I missed it if you did.
Yes. Okay. Yeah. Freddie Blassie, his little vignette. Right.
So Vince runs down that full show, and then they do mention the preempted next week. I'm sorry if you mentioned that too.
No, it didn't. So yeah, no Raw the next Christmas. Week.
Yeah.
Is that now? Yeah, I thought I made a note of that. Maybe it was after this match where they talk about that. Oh yeah, because Lawler says, you know, it'll be next week, and Vince is like, no, next week we're all here.
2 weeks, 2 weeks.
That's after the match, so we'll get to that. Goldust comes out with his usher, and I thought this was kind of dumb, too. So he sits, like, a foot from the entrance.
Right.
And then Razor comes out and acts oblivious, like he doesn't know Goldust is right there in his periphery vision.
So focused and locked in.
Yeah, it looked kind of dumb. Glitter falls from the ceiling when Razor gets in the ring. Yoko attacks right away. Lawler says he sent someone in to retrieve the letter after Razor crumpled it up from Goldust the night before. Yoko gets a slam but misses the elbow, and Razor starts working over the arm. What a maneuver by Vince when Razor lands on his feet on the outside. Razor does a sunset flip attempt. I thought this was a cool – I mean, it was an anticipatory spot, but the crowd caught on to it. Right as Razor went for the sunset flip, you knew Yoko was going to try to do the butt kind of splash, and he ends up missing that. Mm-hmm. Razor rolls out of the way. But Yoko gains back the advantage and pounds away as we head to break. We come back with the claw hold of death of Yokozuna clinched in, but luckily we're kind of at the end of that as Razor starts mounting his comeback. But Yoko still actually beats him down in the corner. I mean, they're still making Yoko look pretty credible here.
They always pretty much have. I mean, they've never really slowed him up. He's always looked like a pretty good beast and been well protected in the booking. It ends soon, but I mean, he had a good, 3-year stretch of being very well protected.
Right. Lawler says if Yoko wins the title, he will be Times Man of the Year, not Newt Gingrich. Somehow I doubt that. Razor makes his comeback, hits the second rope bulldog. The impact did not look good on that. And then the lights start flickering. Vince actually says, I think we're having some technical problems. Taker comes down the aisle with his casket and Paul Bear, still with graffiti on it, I might add. Yoko is spooked by Taker in the casket, so he's still scared of that. And that gets the count out win for Razor because Taker did not touch Yoko to draw the DQ. So, I mean, an okay match. I went 2.25, but I thought this was kind of an odd angle to be starting up between Taker and Yoko all of a sudden.
Yeah, I went 2.5. Vince says they're coming to reap Yoko's soul when they come up.
Wow.
Really coming for vengeance. I did like when Razor comes out and the glitter falls all over him and he looks all confused. Lawler also says he's able to retrieve Goldust's letter from last night, and so we'll see about that. And then they're watching on the video wall. Yeah, the match was all right. A lot of plotting offense. We had a lot of talk about it in your house, and really there anything and everything else that they could find to talk about while this is going on. Yeah, so Razor wins, but kind of it was fine. Nothing stood out. It was kind of boring, but I don't get the finish either, and I don't remember per se if they end up doing this like a mini angle for just for Raw like they did for Bret and Backlund, you know, where they just kind of set it up and the next week they blow it off. But I'm not sure what they were doing here. Why it was just a way to get Taker on TV? Like he's still working through his hit list basically before he gets to the title match. I don't know. Like he finished off Mabel, now he's still coming for Yoko because Yoko is part of that beatdown, so he might be just kind of working through his hit list, I guess. But they don't really make it clear why he's there. They just say he's coming to murder him, basically.
Yeah, it seemed very odd.
Yeah,
I mean, it definitely seemed like Taker had bigger fish to fry between Diesel and Bret than bothering with this.
The crowd loves Razor, though. My God,
Razor's over, but I'm Razor hasn't really had a good match since we've been watching it. I don't know. Razor as a worker is leaving me kind of flat. I feel like he's a very replacement level performer. Like if he's in there in the main event, he looks credible and gives you a good performance, has a good reaction, but you're not, and it just never feels like you're going to get a classic. Like
what's
besides
been his best
the
stuff
Sean
with
Ladder
Kid?
Match. Yeah. I mean, I'd say the best stuff's been the ankle stuff with Kid. Cause he actually looks pretty pissed off. I mean, we'll see with the Goldust stuff because, I mean, Goldust is a pretty renowned worker, more so kind of later, but we'll see how that turns
out. Unless you will.
Right. Vince states there is an international version of Raw next week. Razor says Goldust is right, that he is handsome and hot, but he only likes women when he does his little
promo. By the way, though, before that, we had ads, three more ads. WrestleMania, the arcade game now. NFL QB Club 96, which I had. I had that game. And Erector sets. We get that.
There we go. And then he tells Goldust, you can do your thing, but not with me. So, and then Doc actually asked him what the letter said. And he says, I will tell Doc, I'll tell you, Doc, what the letter said, but out back because it's not for children's consumption. So,
consumption.
Any thoughts on that little promo?
Yeah, it was fine. Yeah, I do like Razor say, I am hot and handsome, but I like women. Make sure we know that he's not gay.
Thank you for the clarification.
Yeah, King said even he was embarrassed by the letter.
So they go back to Vince and King, and Vince is like, well, you said you saw this letter, and King's actually pretty good here where he says, I'll tell you what, it even embarrassed me. That's like this look on his face. Which actually, you know, in real life, you know, it is fucking, it did embarrass him, then yeah, it must have been pretty bad.
Yeah, so by this point, he hadn't really come, like, been presented as any kind of perv or, like, you know, like he's edgy, but he's not like, you know, like a horn dog perv yet. But Vince says this is the most appalling thing in WWF history.
Lawler announces he's getting a Browns jersey for the Raw.
No, Ravens jersey.
No, he said Browns. He's like, even though, because he's a Browns fan.
I know, but I thought he said I'm getting a new Ravens jersey for the
Raw. No. He says even though they're out of there, I'm getting a Browns jersey.
Oh, I thought he said
like
Ravens.
He makes mention that they're going to Baltimore, but he's a Cleveland Browns fan, true and true.
Right, yeah. That's why I was a little confused when he said it, but so I just misheard him. But yeah, so the Ravens, so they had just it now. So the football season would have still been going. So they announced it during season?
I suppose. I don't know. I don't know.
I know they started in 96, but it's kind of crazy to think that. Ravens were established in 96 after Art Modell announced plans to relocate to Baltimore in 95.
So it was already in motion then. And then we get our final segment, which is
November 6th, 95, announced his intention to relocate the team the following year.
Yeah. So they were goners. Now all we have is Tell Me a Lie, which is, I mean, I don't know what you can really say about this. I mean, I think this is a pretty notorious video package just for the melodrama, but, I couldn't really decide watching it if I thought it was well done or over the top. I mean, they show clips pretty much of Sean's whole career from the Rockers on up, him jumping in Diesel's arms.
But is this a rehab? Didn't we already see this after Any House 4?
Not. I don't think we saw it with the actual Tell Me a Lie song. Oh.
Tell Me a Lie was from then. I thought, yeah, because it ends with him turning, remember, like with his beat up face and everything after he had a forfeit the title. And getting beat up.
This does end with him with the Pele.
Oh, all right. Maybe it's here. For some reason, that's the ending I always picture is him looking sad.
That's this video is him walking away after he gives up the IC belt. That's the last image you see.
Tell me so.
Yeah, I mean, I
realize you had to walk away. No more really. Yesterday. God, sorry.
Are we done?
Yeah.
Are we good? All right. Really cheesy. I don't know. There's not much to say. I mean, they're still building up his comeback, so that's good for that. But, I mean, again, this is another show where we saw a little bit of Diesel at the beginning, but as far as live appearances of your top stars between Diesel, Undertaker, Shawn, and Bret, the only person that appeared before the live crowd on this night was Taker rolling down the casket and chasing off Yokozuna.
And Razor, I mean, if you consider
Razor. Razor would probably be your fifth. But, I mean, as we keep saying, I mean, so that's probably their fourth and fifth biggest stars at this point. One made a cameo, one had a match. And he's clearly the five of that grouping. I'd say the other are much bigger four. So,
I mean, they're clearly just like a coach stuck in their ways, refusing to change, right? I mean, just like, whatever. Like, we're still just going to sacrifice Bunt, even if it's stupid. You know, literally, he's still just like, we're just going to, like, play our game. We don't care what Nitro's doing or Bischoff's doing. We're just going to fucking do our thing. We're going to have the two shows. We're not going to load them up. We're just going to spread out our stars, and they'll only appear once or twice, and that's it. Like, this is a live after a pay-per-view show against a live Nitro, and they are just going through the motions pretty much as they're usual. Yeah. Well, I mean, not motions, shouldn't say that. They're trying, but they're not trying to be different.
Well, we'll have to see. I mean, I feel like I want to watch the shows not in this set of tapings, but after this set of tapings, because I feel like this could be a pivotal moment.
Yeah.
Because of the rating we get here and what happens on Nitro.
Yeah.
So we can go into our awards. The match of the night was Yoko versus Razor, I believe, for both of us, correct?
Yes.
Okay. What was your segment of the night?
I had the Tell Me a Lie video. I mean,
I agree. I mean, that's the most memorable thing. MVP?
I don't want Goldust. I kind of wanted to give it to him the night before, but I couldn't because of Brett, and I think he's just been really good since his Razor stuff has started up.
Yeah, I went Goldust as well. I mean, I don't think there's much there wasn't much meat here for other contenders, so might as well give it to him. Commentary?
Yeah, I got a few. King about Fatu's neighborhood said even Santa Claus wouldn't go in that neighborhood after dark. he said he'll beat him as easily as Mike Tyson beat Buddy Mathis, or was it Johnny Mathis? King said that.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody in WWE of history has been as overt in their feelings for somebody as Goldust has been for Ramon, says Vince. So. I went 5 out of 10. Again, it's kind of a middling episode. I didn't think anything was like bad here, but nothing really stood out as good. I thought it moved along fine enough. Like, it didn't drag. So it's kind of a middle of the road episode for me.
It drug for me. I went 4 out of 10. Didn't really think it was very good. And, in contrast to the Nitro, really pretty glaring. And the rating was 2.3.
Jeez, so. Yeah.
Really bad. This ties the 11/27 Raw was a 2.3. Also the 11/21, but this was a bad showing for them. And
especially coming off a pay-per-view.
It was coming off a pay-per-view and compared to what Nitro's rating is, it becomes a problem. Right. So there we go. A
little trivia. Do you remember who the first coach of the Baltimore Ravens was?
No.
Ted Marchabrota.
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, you're young. I do know him. All right. Before we head over to Nitro, really quick, Chad, let's talk about what's going on over on our multiple podcast feeds. We had the premiere episode of Binge Please. Todd Weber explaining the concept of his brand new show, highlighting Netflix. I still haven't gotten this confirmed. Is it Penis or Pen 15? I'm not sure. It's one of the two, but he's talking about it. Check that out. I've heard good things. Going to be listening soon. Steve and Kelly were back with the brand new Songs of Friends, breaking down of the legendary November Rain and Pharrell's Frontin'. Also at episode 4, The Great Debate hit with Andy Atherton welcoming in Russell Sellers, David Sunday, Jason Sherman, and Steve Patty to talk about their various subjects across the spectrum. Andrew and Adam back with the new NBA team podcast, talking about the surveying of the landscape of the NBA, kind of what's coming up on the horizon as we head toward the playoffs. Brand new Howard Traveling Fanboys looking at the Long Book Hunters series that they do every few episodes, diving into the death of Captain Marvel. And, of course, speaking of Captain Marvel, we also had a Pod Blast recap of that. Andy was joined by Scott and Miranda to break down the movie in their eyes. New Talk and Pop hit a week or a half or so ago. Tim and Jenny suffering through My Father the Hero. And speaking of Jenny, her and Miranda have their Geek and Sassy second annual Sassy Awards. If you go to the Geek and Sassy Facebook page, you can grab the ballot and submit your answers and your votes and make your voice heard. So check that out. And their new logo as well. On the PTB and Wrestling feed, Chad, of course, we were here last week at In Your House 5. Continuing on tonight as we try to wrap up 95. Scott and I were joined by Peter Winson last week, looking at the legendary NBC's main event from February of 89 with the Mega Powers exploding. And, of course, a brand new Pod Blast, What If Wrestling, Greg and Nick from the Hard Traveling Fanboys, taking a look at what would have happened if Ric Flair never joined the WWF in 1988. So check all that out, PlayStation.com, up and running. Glenn Butler's Wednesday Walker on the Web, that hit earlier today as well. So be sure to visit as more and more written stuff starts to creep back up as well. And be sure to like the PT Man Greatest Candy Tournament Facebook page. Each and every day we have polls going up. They kicked off on March 10th. The champion will be crowned Easter Sunday. There was a Pod Blast that hit as well the end of last week with me, Andy, and Michael Cook taking a look at the field. We gave our first round predictions. Those polls do go up daily. They're on the Facebook page and our Twitter feed as well. We've had good engagement so far, which we appreciate. So continue to get your votes in to determine the top candy of all time. So anything you want to add there, Chad? Anything I missed?
Justice for Peach Rings is all I got to say.
Okay. Ready to head over to Nitro?
Yeah. So Nitro is in Augusta, Georgia, mm-hmm. The home of the Masters.
Yes. The home of white males. Yes.
Of who? Oh, the
white
the,
males. Augusta.
White males?
They still not let women in there? What's the deal?
Oh, contrary, my friend. Augusta is a very interesting demographic city.
Okay. But at the Masters, weren't there women were banned for a long time, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, they need to know their place.
Okay. All right, King. Let's go.
They're in now. There's a lot on the board. They're working on it.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Clean it up there.
I'm trying to catch up to, 1960s. You
know how, yes. Well, it is interesting. I mean, so, in 2000, golf is kind of interesting because even, a couple of years ago, Sergio Garcia was mm-hmm. making fried chicken racial jokes.
Yeah,
which is kind of amazing, and he sort of just chalked it up to, well, I'm Spanish. I don't, well, it's okay, but I mean, but
we can be fun of black people over here. That's fine.
Yeah, you've been playing in America for 23 years. I think you could have known that was probably not best. To
golf is a real time warp. It's it's very stuck in time, and it's a lot because of the wafting nostalgia of a certain generation. Baseball's the same in so many ways. Golf and baseball are very similar. The nostalgia just clouds what the sport could and should probably evolve into. But I think once a certain generation really starts to die off, we'll see more and more change in both of those.
Yeah, players. Golf is getting better. I mean, I didn't even told you this, but guess who is the newest member of the local country club?
And, oh, boy, look at you.
That's yours truly. Oh, signed up last week.
Big time. So. Country club.
Yes, signed up last week. They're running it was a very good special for, they call it young executive, which again is a little annoying, but it was a really good deal, and they're doing a lot more family events and stuff, so yeah. They're really trying to integrate, like, family and
integrate
social.
Families, but not integrate what they should be integrating, I guess.
Well, I think it's changing.
Okay.
Well, yeah.
I can't wait to do the year in Pop 2019. We could talk about how they finally allowed women into the golf course.
There is women in the golf course. This is not some...
Fucking country club Chad Campbell found your indie gimmick.
Yes, sir.
Email fucking...
Well, you know there was that indie wrestler named Chip Fairway that was like tolling around forever. Did you ever see him?
No, I can't say.
He had like the big golf socks and the slacks and stuff.
Oh, yeah. Actually, that sounds familiar now.
Yeah.
The,
no, I mean, I like it's been nice. I went to the range a couple of times. And it's a good way to like blow off steam off after work is to go hit the golf balls. So. Mm.
All right. Well, good luck. Hopefully everything
goes
well.
It.
Are you going to tip all the help like on Curb Your Enthusiasm? Like go around and tip everyone?
Good Lord. It's not that type of club.
I didn't mean it like that. They don't do it in a racist way. They tip all the wait staff, and that was like one of the
stories. We don't have caddies at this place.
But even the wait staff, the usual, you don't have like the usual waiters and waitresses in the night.
I mean,
hole,
yeah, in the clubhouse.
Whatever the fuck it's called.
Yeah,
that's the episode. Go watch the episode.
Okay.
If you're going to join the country club, you got to do your research and understand how they work.
Oh, okay. I'm glad I'm getting lectured by you that thinks it's 1972.
I don't think they're even to 1972. I don't.
So Pepe is dressed up. And by the way, if you ever had a chance to go to the Masters, you should go to the Masters. Yeah. I legit do think it's one of the best sporting events you can go to. So okay. That's my shield for that. It's beautiful. Pepe with the bandana and the sombrero. And then, I mean, over the course of this show, this may be one of the most top 10 kind of iconic moments in the history of the show, as Eric's kind of just briefly running down the show, and all of a sudden, Medusa comes out. She interrupts them. She just rushes the announce booth, interrupts them.
Mm-hmm.
She says that her name's Medusa, it'll always be Medusa. She displays the WWF Women's Championship belt, throws it in the trash. You get, of course, the iconic gif of her doing that with Mongo just...
eating it up. Oh, he is in love.
Pleased as punch. Bobby with his mouth wide open as she does this. And then she says, they used to call me Alondra Blaze, but not anymore. This is where the big boys play, and now this is where the big girls play. And then stomps off. So now, I mean, obviously I knew about this, but mm-hmm. I think this segment overall is one of the more interesting times of, you know, like they say in history books are written by the winners of the war. And so I had always kind of felt like this was more Medusa kind of bolting from WWF and just crashing, you know, jumping to WCW. And I actually thought she kind of had breached her contract.
Mm-hmm.
Like that was sort of my interpretation.
Right.
And then when I watched this and read up on it and read The Observer and everything, you know, it's come to find out that, I mean, she ended up, like basically WWF said they were not renewing her contract is what it boiled down to. Her contract expired on, I think, 12/12.
Yeah, so it's due to financial troubles.
So, I mean, Vince was trimming the fat, and the women's division was part of that. But you know, I mean, so she was well within her right to me to show up for there. And it's really kind of insane and boneheaded and asinine that they didn't ask for the belt back or get the belt off of her.
Well, I think they figured they were
carelessness.
Yeah, and I figured. I mean, they probably figured they're shit canning the division. So who cared about the belt? You know, they don't need it. They probably weren't even thinking in their wildest minds that she would show up with the belt, because that shit just wasn't done, even though they did it 4 years earlier.
With Flair. That's what I'm saying. I mean,
but,
you just had
just weren't thinking it through. It was ballsy by her because, yes, WCW was doing well, and like Bischoff, I think probably, you know, she talks about it. Like, I think she said in you know, recent times that she was kind of uneasy to do it, and Bischoff really had to kind of push her into doing it. She didn't want to. But it's ballsy at a time because you don't know what WCW is going to do, what WWF is going to do. Like, she pretty much ended up getting herself blacklisted for, you know, 2 decades until they brought her back because
of
it.
Yeah, so I actually went down a pretty good sizable rabbit hole on this, and I watched the Table for Three that she did and talked about this. And, I mean, I get the impression that she's kind of proud of what she did and is sort of annoyed at the fan perception for this. And I do, I mean, you know, we just talked about golf or whatever being in the, you know, catching up with times. I think this is part of it with the wrestling fans' perception too, because, I mean, most people see Flair jumping with the Real World Champion as this badass move. But I do think there's a lot of, you know, your WWF hardcores that are, you know, how could Medusa do that? She disrespected the business or whatever, throwing the belt in the trash. And I really got a different take from this that she, I mean, I don't think she thought that what she was doing on that night would have the ramifications it would, where it would become this, you know, ultimate iconic moment. Oh, but yeah. I mean, I definitely think, you know, I mean, it was ballsy for Nitro to go head to head right out of the gate with mm-hmm. Raw, and they've been sort of jockeying for position and getting little pot shots in. But I do think you can kind of symbolize this moment as kind of the true, you know, Pearl Harbor or whatever of the Monday Night Wars. I mean, I think this is where it becomes a fight, so to speak, and Vince has to know he's in it and needs to wake up.
And he immediately retaliates. I mean, by the time we come back on January 1st,
he's already
firing back.
Exactly. So it's an interesting thing. So what did you think about this segment overall? Because I thought I enjoyed it, and then with the backstory, I really gave a lot of credit to Medusa. So
it was well done. I mean, it jump-started the war, like you said. She was going nowhere. The division was going nowhere in the WWF. I'm not surprised they entered it. We had talked about the potential with Aja Kong and the All Japan women, and that the match with the Rumble was scheduled originally for Blaze and Kong. But as Vince was probably looking at the finances, his shit was in the toilet in late 95. I mean, the women's division was an easy cut. I mean, it couldn't have been generating much at all of any interest. And they really just had been barely even alive for like 2 years while it existed. So to me, it was an easy decision on his point. Stupid to not get the belt, like you said. And I think Bischoff was a smart move on his point to continue to tweak and just put them over as one step ahead constantly, which is pretty much what they've been over the last, you know, 4 months or so. And it's an iconic moment. It's well executed. I like that they do it right out of the gate, that they do it where they did it. They didn't have her come to the ring, and it didn't seem manufactured, you know. She just walks out. It just felt like Luger coming out in that first. You know, the Luger thing is almost the original, like, I don't know, what the assassination.
Yeah, shot across
the bow. Yeah, that was kind of like the first signal. And now this is the second one, and then in May we get the kind of the real blow, right? I mean, that's kind of like the one that really bodies the WWF. But this is a very good one, and like you said, it's iconic. It's probably one of the top 10 to 15 moments in Nitro history. It's one that lives on to this day, especially with her back in the promotion now, back in good graces of WWE. It's one that's talked about more again. It's really well done. And yes, the shit-eating grin on Mongo's face. You know Bischoff is just loving every second of it. Bobby's probably embarrassed for all of them, but he's dealing with it. And then Bischoff actually takes the belt out of the trash. He's like looking at it as Mongo brings out Refrigerator Perry to be his bodyguard for the evening. Another traitor from WrestleMania 2, fucking Fridge.
Exactly. And I don't, I mean, I'll just say quickly, I don't blame Bischoff for, you know, coming up with the idea or whatever.
No, it's brilliant.
I think it's brilliant. Yeah, so good move by him. But yeah, he takes the belt out of the trash can, looks at it, and then sort of has a look of like, oh yeah, this really is a piece of trash, and like just sort of slings it aside. It's so swarmy.
What do you think happened to that belt? You think she just took it back and kept it as a memento?
Or
do you think they really
threw
it away?
Probably. I would think. I don't know. That's interesting. But yeah, so Mongo says he has a friend that's going to take care of people invading the announce booth. Oh no, he also has a great line that he says, sheet covers just got soaked up in Connecticut on that one. So just like the...
What's interesting is they were live. Raw was live, so like you wonder what Vince, if he knew, like
the Observer touches on that Let me pull that up.
Okay. Because I kind of wish I went back and watched that Raw now to see, like, if you could tell when Vince would have maybe found out.
So I think they started, you know, they did the early start here.
Right.
Because it talks about, like, the – so here's – let me just read sort of the Observer because okay. this is a big moment. So J.J. Dillon sent a letter to All Japan Women canceling the Alundra Blaze versus Aja Khan match, and then it was, I guess, rumored.
By the way, I love the idea of J.J. sending a letter.
Yes, yes.
Hear you. We have now decreed that the women's division is dead and you are no longer needed in Fresno in January of 1996.
So the plan was that WWF had negotiated with All Japan Women for Blaze to return to Japan as a regular. And then to kind of come back to WWF for a few pay-per-view shows against Japanese women during the course of 1996. And in this, he talks about how, like, you, even though, as we talked about, All Japan Women were on both Survivor Series and World War III, that apparently All Japan had a much better experience, actually, with WWF as far as negotiating and stuff like that than with WCW. But it does say Bull Nakano and Akira Hokuto may work WCW again because they're actually free agents rather than full-time All Japan Women wrestlers. So that was interesting. And it says her first television match is tentatively set to be in January against Reggie Bennett of All Japan Women. So then we reports we received were that Vince McMahon, who found out about it from a technician early in Raw in the Raw show, was stunned to the point that's why he seemed so tired and distracted on the live show. But then immediately Meltzer kind of uses that to pivot into the WWF negotiating for the Ultimate Warrior to come back. So right. We'll get to that in the weeks to come. But yeah, so apparently, I guess a technician broke the news to Vince.
Right, because I'm sure they were monitoring Nitro, and probably he was like, you know, tell me. Like, I think Bischoff had Raw on at the table, I believe. That's how the tale goes. And he would counter on the fly. I'm guessing Vince would just, you know, for that weeks that they were live, probably just had anyone alert him of anything he should be aware of. I don't recall him. I mean, I don't know. I watched this a little bit ago, so I don't. You watched it more recently. Did he sound like distracted and kind of out of it?
I mean, I didn't think it was noticeable, but it's just amazing that this was going on Nitro at the same time, like Fatu and Double J are strutting around on Raw. I mean, you go from Fatu, who is, you know, a dead character at this point, and Double J, who's, I mean, he came back, but he is what he is. Right. And then it's so night and day.
So, yeah, I mean, it's like different years you're watching, you know. It's like crazy. Right. Crazy how I feel like it's one of the few times that WWF really seems like way behind the curve.
Definitely, yeah. This is bad. So Fridge does come up to the announce booth. Eric tries to give him a handshake, and he leaves Eric high and dry. And then Bobby, he does shake Bobby's hand, and Bobby acts like his grip like is killing him. Like he acts like he has a broken hand from Perry's grip. And Fridge said nothing the whole show. Like, not one word out of Fridge, so a strict enforcer. I mean, I guess having Refrigerator Perry was not bad name cachet. I mean,
no, it's kind of cool. It's weird to have him there, and not like in Chicago or
well,
something.
Well, he lives around Augusta, okay. Right. So,
that makes sense.
He was a local. And that leads us into our first match, which looked pretty tasty on paper. It's Eddie Guerrero versus Ric Flair. So, again, I mean, they have not went to break yet. So, as I said, like, it's a lot going on here. So a basic feeling out process with both men relying on their charisma. Mongo, of course, you never know who is going to show up on Nitro, getting those shots in fast and furious. Flair charges in and gets a drop toe hold by Eddie. And then Eddie does a strut. So there's a lot of strutting going on both segments of these shows.
And I thought Flair had a lot of extra pep tonight, too, when he's coming out. He seemed a little fired up.
Yeah, good reaction. From the Augusta crowd for Flair, too. Flair regroups, and he comes back in. He gets hit with two more drop kicks by Eddie. Eddie does miss the third, and then Flair starts going for the figure four, but Eddie gets a nice roll-up for two off of that. I thought Eddie showed a lot of confidence here and looking like he belonged in the ring with Flair, and Flair was giving him a lot, which was cool. Heenan, of course, says that people in the airport, everybody's talking about Eddie Guerrero and chanting Eddie at him. So
Down the street and people just yelling Eddie Guerrero. That's what I think of. If I saw Bobby Heenan on the street, I'm going to start chanting about Eddie Guerrero.
Eddie. Yeah. So Flair gets a boot up in the corner and takes over the advantage. And Mongo starts talking about the Mike Tyson fight. So there you go. Eddie gets a tornado DDT and a Rana. Flair trips Eddie up on the top rope. He spills to the outside and injures his knee. He does a really good job showing that, like, his knee's injured. He's really hampered. And, of course, Flair attacks that. He stomps on the knee and then chops him on the guardrail. Back inside, Flair's able to lock on the figure four. And Eddie has a pretty good battle. He does not give up. Flair's using the ropes, actually, for extra leverage. And Eddie ends up getting countered out because he has the injured knee. Bobby says it's adios for Speedy Gonzalez. So he gets that in there. But you know, a good opener. I'd like to see a long-form match between these two, but this is kind of a good appetizer. I went 2.5 stars.
Yeah, 2.5 for me as well. And you said countered out, but you meant like he passes out pretty much on the hold and gets countered
out. He passes out on the hold and the referee counts the 1, 2, 3 because his shoulders are off the mat. Yeah.
So Bobby does the Speedy Gonzalez and he does like a racist voice as well while he's passing out, like a Mexican voice or whatever.
Adios, Speedy Gonzalez.
It is Augusta. No, this was fine. It really took some time to get cooked. They really needed more time to get cooking. I would have, like you said, it was a good appetizer. But yes, it would be cool to see them get a little bit more time, really work into it. The only other note I had on commentary is Bischoff really runs through all the possibilities if Giant wins the title. And talks about next week with Starrcade coming, all the potential things that could happen if the title swaps and it's off of Savage and how that would play in a Starrcade. So I thought that was interesting. And then Arn comes in to celebrate after the match, and that brings us to the next segment.
Right. So Arn's in the ring. Mean Gene does his interview. And they're, like, stomping Eddie Guerrero, like, out of the ring. And Gene, I love when Gene threatens the heels because he's like, I will knock this interview down right now. It's like, well, okay. Like, that's a big threat. Arn says that he respects Paul Orndorff as a man in wrestling, but for every action, there's an opposite reaction. And then Arn says there's two ground rules, and that's that you don't put personal achievement above the whole group, and when you jump on one of us, you jump on all of us. So, you know, basically saying it's horsemen, you know, horsemen first always. Then the interview gets interrupted by Kevin Sullivan.
And Jimmy Hart.
But Kevin jumps in the ring. He says he respects Arn and Flair. At this point, Flair at his back completely to the camera. And Gene actually says, hey, the hard camera's that way. And, like, turns him around. Like, points him in the right direction. Sullivan says that when Pillman knocks a Dungeon of Doom member, he knocks them all. He also says to keep Pillman on a short leash or he'll come for them, which that gets Arn all hot and bothered, and he gives a warning back to Kevin Sullivan. So a little disruption here between the Dungeon and Doom and the Four Horsemen.
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to take out Hulkamania, but clearly Pillman's kind of stirring the pot between the two of them, causing issues. You know, Sullivan says they have a loose cannon on the ship with Pillman, and Arn says if they come for Pillman, they'll get Flair and Arn too. So, no, this is really well done. I'm kind of liking the little back and forth between these two groups with the Dungeon, you know, not liking Pillman, but respecting Arn and Flair. So it's like it's rival mobs, rival gangs, right, where the leaders respect each other, but the young punks are really pushing the envelope. So it's like Sullivan's like, you know, I respect you guys, but it's only going to take you so far because eventually Pillman's going to make the wrong move and we're going to have a fight. So, no, this has been really well done. It's kind of like a nice dichotomy to what's happening on the face side, where, like, they're all kind of warring as well.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
A lot of angst.
So we still have not taken our first break, mind you. Eric regroups and explains everything. And then we get another little mini, I guess, program or something I'd forgotten about till it came on. But here comes Sergeant Craig Pittman.
Mm-hmm.
So he starts talking. He has a microphone with him. He starts. So there's two things here. One, he has the microphone with him. He starts talking, but he's holding the microphone like around his stomach, and Eric has to like tell him to raise the microphone. He's like, if you're going to say something, let's make sure everybody hears you. So not a great start for the Sarge. Second, where the hell was Refrigerator Perry?
Yeah, he's supposed to be watching over.
Like, Mongo just says, like, I'm sick and tired of people rushing the announce booth, and my buddy Fridge is going to make sure that doesn't happen again. And like 7 minutes later, here comes Sergeant Craig Pittman crashing the announce booth. So Pittman goes up to Bobby Heenan, who apparently he just realized he used to be one of the best managers of all time.
He's like, I've been doing my homework. I just realized.
Yeah, he's like, I've been doing my research. So there we go. And he wants Bobby to manage him. And Bobby's like, so you want me to manage you? And he says, that's an affirmative. So Bobby tells him he's a broadcast journalist now and his managerial days are behind him. But he says he will put in a good word for him, maybe to someone that could help him financially, including Jimmy Hart. And then Pittman has this like weird line at the end that I don't know if they were going for like a PTSD or exactly like what they were going for. But he basically says, well, if I don't get help soon, I'm not going to take any prisoners. So that was
so he basically saying he needs a manager to keep him, like, sane and, like, not murder people. It was a weird way to do it.
Yeah. Sounds like he needs Steve Willey, not a not Jimmy Hart here.
Needs some spectacular advice.
Yes. So this was just weird. I mean, Pittman's kind of an odd – he has sort of an odd persona.
Right.
Anyway, I didn't think this came off. This came off more bizarre than effective, I would say. But, I mean, I guess at least they're trying to do something with him. We finally get our first break. We come from back from break, and it's our second match, which is Lex Luger versus Buff Bagwell, or Marcus Bagwell, who is no longer Alexander, I guess, because they just say Marcus. I thought we got some good quick wrestling from Lex here to start out, and he hits a hip toss. Bagwell comes back and sends Lex to the outside. Lex is really pissed by that. Eric, of course, calls Jimmy Hart a maggot. And Luger comes back and pounds away as Scotty Riggs runs out to ringside. Bagwell gets a backbody drop and two clotheslines, but the flying forearm takes Lex down. But then Bagwell goes for a splash, and Luger gets his knees up. And then they kind of immediately go into the finish where Lex hits a power slam and a torture rack, and that's it. So, I mean, this felt like sort of kind of the Raw matches we saw where it was inoffensive but nothing great, and I ended up going a star and a half on this one. Basically, this was just used to make Luger look strong heading into the triangle match at Starrcade.
Yeah, that was fine. I went to Bobby wonders why Hogan is even here and tells us to stay tuned. I thought Luger looked jacked, and then Bischoff puts over Bagwell's dedication to the gym and kind of puts over his growth. And you can see it. Like, he is starting to really get built up. And he says he's one of the few that rivals Lex. I thought Lex was good with his discombobulated selling. He's always off guard, you know, early on. And I thought that's like some of his best work usually in these matches. It was fine. Yeah, Luger's chugging along. I thought both guys got some shine. And, you know, still in the middle of all the crap going on around him, but he's focused for Starrcade, so.
All right. And then Gene interviews Jimmy Hart and Lex Luger. Jimmy says Luger is the uncrowned heavyweight champion of the world. Luger says he is breathless with anticipation as he goes through each opponent in WCW. And he talks about all the times he's had the advantage on Randy Savage, which he thinks will culminate in him becoming the champion on next Wednesday at Starrcade.
And he also says he had Hogan pinned until Savage made the save,
right,
in their match. So
now we get the rundown for WCW Saturday Night. On the Mothership this week, we had Johnny B. Badd versus Arn Anderson, VK Wall Street versus Alex Wright, Sergeant Craig Pittman versus Cobra. So they're still running that feud.
Poor Cobra, you better watch out.
He's taking no prisoners. Lex Luger's in action, and then a very special Sting interview. So, a pretty loaded show there. Our third match is Sting versus Robert Earl Eaton. Jeeves is out with the Earl. Eric says Jeeves sounds like a skin condition.
Stupid joke. Bobby does say English people treat each other with respect. Which, if you're on Twitter, you'll see is not the case.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, that was a cheap shot. Bobby asked Mongo what he would do to his friends on the football field. And Mongo says that, you know, they would go after each other, but they'd play fair. And he says he doesn't think Luger will pull any cheap shots he can to win the championship. So he doesn't think Luger's going to hold that same opinion in the triangle match. Sting gets a monkey flip on Eaton. Eaton gains the advantage with some nice punches and arm work. Sting kind of looks like he's firing away, but Eaton has a nice backbreaker that looked like it was pretty crunchy on Sting's back. But Eaton misses the knee from the top, and then Sting starts making his comeback. Stinger splash, and Scorpion gets the win for Sting. So much like the Luger versus Bagwell match, this is again helping Sting gain momentum into the triangle match. Another pretty decent match. I ended up going 2 stars on this one.
Star of 3/4 for me. Again, just another showcase that if I had more time or if a story could have been really fun, I'm sure. But as is, just had not much going on. The highlight to me was Mongo telling Sting to knock the Great Britain right out of Eaton. Quite the line. Heenan says Savage is doing too much as champion. It's taking the toll. He's mentioned that a couple times week after week. So that seems to be a big story for Savage, that he's really grinding himself down, and now it's going to catch up to him possibly at Starrcade with all these matches he's taking on as champion. So they really push Savage as a fighting champion and having him do it. It's not just lip service. He is wrestling every week against all various kinds of guys. So, yeah, just to showcase, we've seen Sting and Luger now both get kind of hyped for Starrcade with and Flair. Actually, it's I didn't really pick up on it till now, but it's been a nice little through line to the show that the three guys right. going to the triangle match have all gotten showcase matches here.
Yeah.
Tonight, so.
And then the champion Savage is in the main event.
Right.
So
yeah, it's well done.
You really, I mean, yeah, I mean, we'll talk about this. This is kind of a thread line throughout the whole show, but I mean, they're sort of really put on the afterburner, the New Japan versus mm-hmm. WCW thing, the World Cup of Wrestling. And they're really hyping the triangle and then the world title match as the main focal point of Starrcade.
And it's interesting because I think at this point they were still like really using their other shows. Like Nitro was the main show, but Saturday Night and others like still had a lot of stuff going on. I think a lot of the Japan stuff was happening there. Like Ono was still owned worldwide. You know, like they were still really pushing it on those shows. Saturday Night had 2 hours to work with as well. So I think a lot of that stuff was happening there. Like I think a lot of the guys from New Japan were actually on those shows during this time, if I remember correctly. So I think they were definitely kind of splitting the load between those shows and Nitro.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen Ono in a long time on Nitro. So maybe he's doing stuff elsewhere.
Right.
Gene was punchy tonight.
Yeah.
Like what he did with Flair. And then so he interviews Sting, and he basically says, like, I'd rather be downing eggnog with my buddies than to talk about this serious business with you. And then Gene sets the table for Starrcade. Sting says he dislikes Flair, and we all know that. And he's a little miffed that Luger omitted his name from going through all the talent in WCW. Gene kind of, you know, plays it up a little bit and kind of eggs Sting on there. Sting basically says he's been champion 5 times and he'd love to make it 6.
Mm-hmm.
So that's sort of his promo. Your usual kind of zany energy from Sting in this promo.
Yeah, just highlights kind of, he won't forget what Flair did, and he takes Luger to task and wants the belt. So
we get an ad for Halloween Havoc, which comes out on VHS tomorrow. You don't get a lot of that from WCW. So
no, definitely not.
Made note of that. I mean, you know, WWF calls him home video this Tuesday and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Eric talks about the monster trucks and he goes, man, that was cool. Oh, there we go.
Some of those.
Bobby actually gets in a good line by saying, you know, well, I bet you get some extra footage there that you didn't get on the pay-per-view. So a good hype job from the brain there.
Mm-hmm.
And then that leads us into our main event. So this was, this show
huge
pumped
match.
It out.
Yeah.
It was quick. And this is a big match. Like you said, it's the for the World Heavyweight Championship. We have Randy Savage versus the Giant. So Savage, I thought, had a really sweet pink and neon green outfit on tonight. Bobby says Hogan parks car at the building when they're speculating where he's at. It's just any dig at Hogan, of course, from Bobby. Savage uses his speed to stick and move to start out. Savage tries to choke out the Giant, which is, I thought that was great psychology, like to wear this big guy down, kind of choking him out. I thought Giant sold that really well. And then he shoves Savage over the top rope. And then Jimmy Hart gets on the top, gets on the apron. Savage knees the Giant into Jimmy Hart. He makes the mistake of trying to slam the Giant, but then Giant clobbers away. Giant has a bear hug. As we go to a break in the middle of the match, we come back from break with the Giant slamming Savage. Savage is great, as usual, building sympathy for himself. And then Giant actually slams Savage back into the ring. He goes to the top, which was amazing, but he misses the splash. And, I mean, the Giant really went for that splash. Like, it did not look pretty. When he missed that, Bobby, of course, says Andre never did that. So we're still hanging on.
Way longer than I thought. I mean, just way longer.
So I thought was just a great spot where he misses that big splash. Savage immediately goes up top, hits the big elbow.
An awesome elbow. I mean, it was. He drilled him. That was great looking.
It looked great. We had the 1-2, and then the Giant press slams Savage with a ton of authority. I mean, Savage went flying up in the air. That looked amazing. And then the Giant gets up and throws a drop kick, which looked also great. I mean, I'll just say I'm in love with the Giant.
Yeah, he's been really good.
He's been good. I mean, all this standing for Mabel that you see going on. These people need to be watching 95 Giant, please. Yeah. Because it is far superior to what Mabel is showing on the WWE.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, no, he was great. I mean, he was flying around the ring and intimidating. They booked him great. No, he's been really good.
He removes the mats outside. He tries to goes for a suplex, Savage onto the concrete. And I thought this looked really cool. Yep. Where I mean, Savage like barely hangs on to the ropes. And it's just sort of dangling there like a spider, like on a web. It looked really good. Giant sort of slaps off the concrete.
Oh, he splatted so hard. Over. Yeah, he like smashed off of it. But then he no-sells it at a great moment, too.
Yes.
He just gets the fuck up.
He just like basically hulks up essentially off of that, hits his choke slam. Bobby proclaims that we have a new champion. And then Giant hits the leg drop, which I loved.
Yep.
And then Hogan comes in and interrupts things with a chair. Do we want to talk about the post-match, or do we – I'm always at a dilemma here because there's always the match and then there's the after the match.
Yeah, I mean, the match was really good. Heenan works in the Savage debut at Starrcade a year ago, like to kind of, you know, tie his ear together. I mean, you hit on everything I would hit on, and I was trying to kind of comment as we went. So, no, it was a really good match. I went 3 stars.
Yeah, I actually went 3.25 here. Yeah. I mean, so this is like a borderline hidden gem for us. I thought it was a pretty, I guess, exceptional. I don't know. I just was really impressed by it. And then, so Hogan's in the ring. He shoves at the referees. They bring up Hogan on probation. Hogan hits the Giant and Pee-wee, and then Nick Patrick with the chair. So a Giant, I thought, took a great bump to the outside off the chair. Mongo on the announce booth says he's sick of this. So him and Fridge run down to ringside. They try to get Hogan to calm down. Doug Dillinger hits the scene, but Hogan actually hits him with the chair. So that was crazy as Mongo and Perry are trying to, like, back off with Hogan. And you know, Augusta is behind Hogan.
they were cheering for him. They loved it.
We get Hogan chance here. And I thought, I thought Hogan for his part did look pretty vicious with these chair shots. Like for once, I mean, he didn't look as lame, because he was really popping Giant, especially like
giant's head bounces off these chairs.
Well, he didn't look lean yet because he wasn't talking. Like, he's been fine when he's not talking.
So we get the interview, of course, to end it. Hogan says that, you know, they've all been reprimanded, but Flair and Giant are getting rewarded with title matches.
Right. Lots of people are on probation.
Yeah. So where is my title match? Giant comes back out, but he's being restrained by Kevin Sullivan and, of all people, Sergeant Craig Pittman.
Pittman's angling for a role in the dungeon.
So this is
will you be my manager? He's asking him while they're holding back the Giant. Will you be my manager?
Big moment for the Sarge here.
Yeah.
Hogan runs into the entranceway and paced him with a chair again. Nasty shots.
Yeah.
Then Hogan gets back in the ring, says he's sick of this probation stuff. He says his name is still on the belt.
Yeah.
Which is
probably true.
I mean, what's going on there? Like, Savage has been champion for a month here.
Right.
Then he says Savage owes him a title shot. Gene turns to Savage and is like, what is going on with Hogan? He's off the deep end. And then Savage is like, yeah, Hulkster went a little Looney Tunes, brother.
But it'll be straight up.
And then basically Savage, like, tells Hogan to get his place in line because he's like, look, dude, I got Flair next week on Nitro. I got Tens on at Starrcade, and then I got the winner of the triangle match. So, you know, Hogan's kind of putting the cart before the horse here.
Right.
And he says, you know, he says after that, if you want Macho versus Hogan, you got it. Hogan calls Mongo Steve Michaels here.
The heartbreak kid.
And then Hogan says, has some stern words for him, and Fridge says, don't ever make a mistake to get in his and Macho's arena again, or they'll take him out.
So, they said we'll get taken apart.
Yeah, so setting up a little mini angle there with the football players. He asked the crowd if they want Hogan versus Macho. They respond with yes. So, I thought this all in all was a little bit of a weird promo, but pretty.
It was good. I think it encapsulated the craziness. I thought it was one of the better Hogan performances overall, between the brawling and then this. The Steve Michaels stuff is great. No, it was really well done. It's a hot close, and it's been really fun to watch it evolve. And I love when he runs in the aisle and knocks out them with a chair and then comes back. So, no, this is all really well done. The match and the post-match is really good stuff.
Then we get our kind of one-minute wrap-up with the announcers. Mongo just said he was trying to save Hogan from himself and suspension. Bobby tells him that he's a grown man and he should, you know, be able to make mistakes if he wants to. Bobby tells Mongo to stay in his seat where he belongs, and then he says he'll knock Perry out, which is funny. We get the Nitro rundown for next week with Flair versus Savage, and we are out.
Big match next week, too. They just keep pumping out these huge
matches. Oh, yeah. Big main events. So let's get into our awards here.
Okay.
Match of the night, I assume, was the main event.
Yes. Yep.
Although, I mean, Eddie versus Flair was probably better than anything else we saw on Raw as well. Your segment of the night, I mean, I would guess it has to go to the Medusa thing just for the shock value.
I did not vote for that. I actually went with the Savage Giant post-match. I thought that was excellent. But, yeah, I don't know. I should probably change it. I think by the end I had forgotten about the Medusa stuff, honestly, because that ending was so hot.
Yeah. I mean, a lot happens on these shows, for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, it's
all right, I'm going to change it to Medusa. I mean, that is a big moment, so.
Well, what about MVP? Who'd you go for there?
Savage.
Okay. I went to Giant, so I just think for a rookie, he's really holding his own.
Yeah, for sure.
Commentary?
Yeah, I got a few. I go through airports, hotels, everywhere I go. People talk about Eddie Guerrero. That's Bobby. Yeah. Tyson, this made me laugh too because it was the same joke as King pretty much. He said Tyson would have been better off fighting Johnny Mathis. Call back to King. saying his Johnny Mathis joke. I've been sneaking and peeking and found out you're one of the greatest managers of all time. That's what Pittman said.
There it is.
You want to name your kid Jeeves, said Heenan. Sounds like a skin condition, said Bischoff. So, yeah. And then shots fired, of course, Medusa.
Oh, yeah. The ultimate shots fired there. Pepe was wearing the Bandito costume, as I said. And Nitro had a 2.7, mm-hmm. which is their biggest rating to date.
Which is crazy. I mean, was Savage Giant that hot of a match? Because, I mean, no one knew about the Medusa stuff, unless people tuned in, maybe, if they heard and saw it. I guess it's kind of crazy.
Maybe. I don't know if they got the quarters breakdown, but that would have been interesting to see. But, I mean, I think Savage versus Giant is a matchup that has some appeal. I mean, Giant has been a pretty, like, kind of sneaky draw for them because mm-hmm. – Havoc did good with him, and, you know, this is a marquee match for him, so.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big spectacle, yeah. And the last week's Nitro was really good, too, so.
Right. So what'd you rank this one?
I went 6 out of 10. I thought it was just a notch below the last one with the Horseman Orndorff stuff that was awesome. Obviously, the Medusa moment's big, but it doesn't really lead to much. I mean, historically, it's big, but, like, in the concept of the show, like, you don't hear about it, and, like, that's it. Like, I don't know if she even starts right away. I forget. And the end was really good, but you kind of get those three matches that were, like, fine, but, like, a little bit below Nitro standard and, like, not much happening in the Sting and the Luger match. So I had just a notch below last week, so I went 6.
So I had a notch above last week, so it was 6.5 out of 10. But, I mean, I think it is bookended by the memorable moment, which is more memorable in retrospect probably. And then I was just sort of over the moon for the Savage Giant match. I mean, I've watched a lot of wrestling this week, and it's been a few days since I watched that match. But I kind of just talking about it again, I'm taking back to it and really enjoyed that performance by both men.
Agreed. And, of course, the debut Medusa.
Right. So do we want to do our combo?
Sure do. I think it's going to be another probably ugly sweep here, but we'll see. All right, best show, easily Nitro.
Easily Nitro.
Yeah. Savage
best
Giant.
Best match, easily Savage Giant.
Best segment, Medusa.
I think best segment we'd probably have to do a Medusa just for the shock value commentary. I would go Nitro as well.
Yeah.
And then your star of the night, I mean...
I'm fine going Giant.
Savage or Giant.
Yeah, we'll go
take
Giant.
Take your pick. And the ratings winner was Nitro, pretty resoundingly, 0.4. So
Nitro has really dominated other than the Raw after In Your House 4 and the Go Home to Survivor Series. Other than that, it's pretty much been Nitro.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Raw after Survivor Series, I would say, was a really strong Raw. But, yeah, since then, it's been Nitro, Nitro, Nitro. Mm-hmm.
All right, that'll do it. So on our next episode, Chad, we'll be talking, it'll be just Nitro, because like we said, Raw is off. So Nitro does run a live show on Christmas night, which was kind of cool. So we'll be reviewing that alone, and that'll be the go home to Starrcade 95. So it'll be all WCW for our next two episodes. We'll be taking a little breather from the WWF. So like I mentioned earlier, subscribe to our feeds on iTunes, PlayStation Wrestling, which you probably have already subscribed if you're hearing this, and PlayStation Pop. And, of course, PlaceMeNation.com, you know, Place Me in Your Pop Culture World, Facebook.com/PlaceMeNation. We also have a Wrestling Warzone, Monday Night Wars Facebook page, too, if you want updates on the show. And we throw some topics up from time to time there. Visit our message board, Bigelow34 at UproarBoards.com, and Twitter, Place2BNation. Be sure to get your votes in on the Candy Tournament. And any feedback you have for us to read on air for Raws. We don't really solicit for the Raws on Nitro, but we will read it if you submit it. And then on the pay-per-views, we push for it. So anything else, Chad, you got before we go?
I think I'm good.
All right. Smell that napalm, brother. Talk to you soon.